Monster Man, episode 425, Kira to Kuotoa.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, I am back in the UK, and normal recording, well, almost normal recording, has been resumed. We should now be up to date in terms of patron messages, and if you want to get in touch, I'll try and reply a little more quickly. So normal service is being resumed, and we should be on a fully normal schedule by the end of next week. What that means is that today we're continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And we've got one new monster and two old ones, or two and two? It all sort of depends how you see it. We start off with the Kira, or Kiri, K-I-R-R-E. This is a new monster, and I think the first really new one that we've had in a long time. This is a creature from the Dark Sun campaign setting, the world of Athas, and it is a big psychic cat with eight legs, horns, and a spiky tail. Dark Sun has a reputation for being a very harsh setting with a lot of focus on survival, where there are a lot of dangerous sort of ordinary encounters. And I don't know if that's actually true, but it's definitely reflected in the Kira, which is a pretty tough customer. And quite apart from being psychic, it has seven attacks around, right? So it's got a bunch of claws, and it's got its bite, and it's got its horns, and it's got its spiky tail. Ecologically or narratively speaking, the Kira is just a sort of tiger-like predator. And like tigers, they are hunted as a kind of mark of prestige, right? No one hunts tigers for food, but they hunt them, I guess, as kind of like a safari thing where people do it to prove their courage or whatever, or for other social reasons. So the various like rulers of the tribes and civilizations that live in the forests and jungles of Athas, you never think of Athas having forests and jungles. In my mind, it's just, you know, not even Mad Max so much as like one of those Italian Mad Max knockoffs. But I think the idea of having a Kiri hunt could be a fun scenario, right? Like you have to go to speak to some big wig or rich jerk, and it turns out that he's off in the forest on a Kiri hunt, or even like he demands that you prove your courage to him before he will grant you the blue jewel. You know, you have to kind of build up your social status with this guy. And so you got to go on the Kiri hunt. That's pretty cool. I like that. Basically, though, the Kiri is just like taking an animal that was already pretty extreme and then being like, well, what if it had twice as many claws and it had horns and it had a barbed tail and it was psychic? And I'm not trying to say that that's kind of the feeling one sometimes gets off Dark Sun. Perhaps it would be more accurate to say that that's just like the feeling that one gets off of the 90s. You know, take the existing thing that was already good and then give it more spiky bits. This is definitely a monster for jaded players. Next up, we have the kobold. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail about this entry because it pretty much tells you, you know, about kobolds. But I do think that here you can see kobolds establishing something of their distinct identity. There is some Tucker's kobold kind of stuff in here about how kobolds like to use traps and whatever. Like, they're reasonably clever. I don't think they are. The typical kobold has an intelligence of between 5 and 7, which is not very smart. You know, they're not more intelligent than a Kiri. But, you know, they sort of like, they don't like direct confrontation. They know that they're small and weak, so they try to use stealth and trickery and the terrain to their advantage. That all seems fair to me. It also implies that the fact that they're small and weak, because they hang out with other goblinoids and similar creatures, it means that they get bullied a lot, which accounts for their mean disposition. So kobolds are... So even in this entry, okay, there is kind of like species-wide generalization. Kobolds are like this. But it roots that generalization in society and in behavior, not in some kind of like innate impulse to do things. In addition to the kobold, we also get the Urd, which is a kind of like little koboldy creature with wings, and is what would eventually evolve into modern D&D's draconic kobold, right? That you have kobolds who have grown wings to be more like their draconic ancestors. Here, kobolds are still kind of just like little rat-like creatures. Not rat-like, but, you know, kind of little vermin-y scruffy guys rather than lizards. The highlight of the kobold entry is definitely the illustration, which features a kobold who has like a long fishing rod at the end of which is dangling a scorpion. I would have said that tying a scorpion to the end of a pole is a pretty involved operation, but I guess it's intelligence the kobolds don't have much of, not dex. Finally, we have the Kuotoa, which, like the kobolds, has a great Tony Deterlitzy illustration. We get a lot of detail about Kuotoa society and like the different proportions of different types of Kuotoa that'll be in different Kuotoa forces. I imagine that this is all kind of from Shrine of the Kuotoa. The entry's a little weird, so when we're told that Kuotoa have some connection to the elemental plane of water, and consequently, elemental water monsters may not attack them, they're described as being 75% unlikely to attack them, which is the weirdest formulation of a probability that I've ever heard, right? Well, not ever, but we've seen it several times. It seems really strange. Why wouldn't you say there's a 75% chance that they will not attack? That's much more like something a human being and not a space alien would say. We're also told that the pincer staffs, or the claw staffs, used by Kuotoa leaders can capture any creature that is within the girth range between an elf and a gnoll. I don't know about you. Look, I think about monsters probably more than the average person. I mean, a good deal more than the average person. I'm in a high percentile in terms of the amount of time I spend thinking about D&D monsters, but it has never once, apparently this is my oversight, it has never once occurred to me to categorize them by their girth. I get what it's trying to say. If you're skinnier than an elf, the pincer can't close enough to hold you in and you can slip out. If you're beefier than a gnoll, then the pincer can't really open wide enough to grab you. Okay, but what does this serve that wouldn't be served by saying all creatures of size medium? Otherwise, I have to think like, well, okay, I guess bugbears, like, they're not as tall as gnolls, but they're kind of buffer. You know, what? The girth. Is this to include small creatures that are also, like, broadly built? You know, so, like, halflings are size small, I think. But they're pretty chubby, so would it catch them? This is not a request to add girth as a stat to the game, and indeed, I have said the word girth more in this episode than I care to generally. The monitor, a type of Kuotoa monk, whose job is to kind of look after Kuotoa who've gone insane from, I mean, the stresses of being a Kuotoa, basically, that is added in this section. And then we get their background, you know, their story of being driven underground after losing a war with humankind. All very well. It's kind of the story of the Drow. I mean, not quite. The Drow were elves, and then they split off from the main wood elf culture after a war in which they sided with evil. But basically, like, it explains the Kuotoa's resentment, I suppose. This is a perfectly okay section, and if it weren't for the stuff about girth and what have you, I would be perfectly comfortable with this. It's just not really a big departure from the original Kuotoa. All right. That is about all of the monsters that we have time for today. Now, what I'm currently hoping is that our next episode will be a My Favorite Monster special episode, in which I sit down with game designer Jason Cordova, and we talk about the upcoming new edition of his game Brindlewood Bay, as well as the Minotaur, the benefits of individual monsters, and much, much more. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.